Hello, everybody. My name is Brian Clifus, KF6 Zedio. I work at SRI International out in the Bay Area. And today I am going to be talking about CubeSat and CubeSat data communications. The first three slides here is just a summary of all the CubeSats that have been launched to date. The first launch was in 2003. And you can see by the different colors here, the different services that the transmitters use. So most of the CubeSats in the beginning were all using the amateur radio service at 437 megahertz, a few experimental CubeSats. Here's the launches from May of 2009 up to October of 2011. And you can still see that most of the CubeSats were using the amateur radio service at 437 megahertz. The Falcon 9 launch in December of 2010 was the first real government CubeSat launch. And Perseus, QBX, and SMDC-1 were all government-funded CubeSats. And some of them were military, so they did not use amateur radio frequencies. Here's the most recent launches of CubeSats over the past year. DICE, which was on the Alana 3 launch in October of 2011, was the first NSF funded CubeSat to not use amateur radio frequencies. They used the meteorological satellite band in the 460 to 470 megahertz region. And I'll talk more about that later. That was 2 1.5U CubeSats. Also, Cinema on Alana 6 used the 2.2 gigahertz space research band. You can see on the right side there the transmitter totals for all the 77 CubeSats that are on orbit, that were delivered to orbit. There were 53 amateur radio transmitters in the amateur radio service, 18 experimental transmitters, and 15 transmitters that were not in either of those two services. You can see on the bottom there the totals, 77 CubeSats delivered to orbit. 19 CubeSats were launched, but there was a problem with the launch vehicle, and so they never made it to orbit. 7 of the CubeSats that made it to orbit were dead on arrival, and so that's about 10%. And those were mostly the early CubeSats and also some of the Vega CubeSats from earlier this year. And 17 CubeSats decayed or deorbited in total. So I think in terms of space debris, the CubeSat community is pretty darn good, much better than the Iridium or the Chinese or the latest Breeze explosion that happened a couple weeks ago. So just looking at the CubeSat community, there's kind of two classes of CubeSats. There's the beginner CubeSats, which are typically educational universities. They're new teams, and they're playing the systems integrator role. They're taking a power board, maybe from ClydeSpace, putting in a CubeSat kit from Pumpkin, and they have a payload, maybe, but mostly it's an educational mission. They typically use VHF or UHF amateur radio frequencies because it's pretty easy to get a license, and the hardware is out there and available and has flown before. In the paper, I talk about CP4, Libertad, and Explorer 1 Prime FU2, which was from Montana State University. The other class of CubeSat is the higher performance CubeSats. And these are built by established CubeSat teams or other universities or teams that have established satellite programs, larger satellite programs like Berkeley or Utah State University. They're typically NSF funded or other US government funded. And they're usually pretty darn expensive in the $1 million to $2 million range is kind of where they start at. And these CubeSats are actually doing real science. They have real mission objectives. They do have complex and expensive payloads, and these payloads generate large amounts of data, and so they need much greater bandwidth than the typical 1200 or 9600 baud amateur radio communications. And because they need greater bandwidth, they typically go with higher frequencies. In the paper, I talk about RACS, DICE, Cinema from UC Berkeley, QBX from NRL, and the AeroCubes from the Aerospace Corporation down in LA. So one of the questions that I talk about in the paper is, are amateurs interested in higher frequencies, higher than UHF? And I mean, you kind of talk to people and you see that amateur radio satellite communications are, there's different groups within, you know, even within the group here. You know, you've got people that just want to talk on their HT with arrow antennas outside, you know, VHF, UHF, FM birds. Another group wants high Earth orbit only, and they're kind of out of luck right now. But that's what they really want, and the, you know, other people want microwave, you know, 10 gigahertz and higher satellites or lasers or all this kind of fun stuff. And so I think that in terms of going to higher frequencies, there is a group within the amateur radio community that is interested in going higher than UHF. And it's also just the evolution of communications. You know, way back when radio started, you know, everything above 30 megahertz was considered a wasteland because we'd never actually get anything transmitting up there. And today we look at 25 gigahertz and say, oh, you can't do anything up there. But maybe 50 years from now, that's where everything will start. Who knows? So within the CubeSat community, just some numbers there at the bottom, 44 of the 77 CubeSats are using amateur radio frequencies exclusively. And I think that's a pretty big number. If you include experimental licensed CubeSats in the VHF, UHF amateur radio frequency bands, that increases the number to 56. So a big chunk of all the CubeSats that were launched in orbit are using amateur radio frequencies. And the BeepSats will probably always use the amateur radio frequencies just because it's easy to use. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily a bad thing. They have low data rates. They use a small slice of spectrum. The IARU has sectioned them off into a couple hundred kilohertz in the 437 megahertz region, which protects the more traditional amateur radio CubeSats, you know, AF51 and the voice and linear birds. So I'm not sure that the UHF amateur CubeSat communications is necessarily a bad thing. For the higher performance CubeSats, they will go to higher frequencies just because they need the bandwidth. And so I think within the CubeSat community, there is interest going up to higher frequencies. Here's just a chart of CubeSats that are higher than the UHF 437 megahertz. We start off just above the amateur radio spectrum there at 465 megahertz. I talked about DICE a little bit earlier. It's a 1.5 megabit per second L3 cadet radio. And it's on the DICE CubeSats. The Aero Cubes are in the 902 to 928 megahertz ISM band, and they're using a 38.4 kilobaud FreeWave Technologies radios. Those are AeroCube 2, 3, and then the 3.1Us for AeroCube 4. Jumping up to 2.2 gigahertz space research bands, we've had two CubeSats that have used that so far. CAN-X2, way back when in 2005, I think. That was a custom radio from the University of Toronto. And also the MHeiser radio on Cinema was just launched a few months ago. 1 megabit per second FSK. There have been a bunch of CubeSats in the 2.4 gigahertz ISM bands using the MicroHard MHX 2400. All the NASA CubeSats, MAST, racks. As you can see there, you know, 10 kilobits a second, the MicroHard radio is not designed for space communications. It's a frequency hopping spread spectrum radio that, you know, has handshaking protocols and all this stuff. And it's really not designed for space communications. But they had a little bit of success early on, and so people jumped on board and said, hey, this is a radio that works, even though it doesn't work all that well. On the latest CubeSat launch from the ISS earlier this month, the Japanese had a 5.8 gigahertz transmitter, 115 kilobits a second, for their, it was a camera. They have a camera on board and LED experiments. And then also on that launch, a 2U Ryko from Tohoku University, also in Japan. They had a KU band transmitter. Just an update on the latest Solana 6 launch out of Vandenberg in the beginning of September. Just some general issues with that launch. Object identification is still very difficult. The primary payload was classified, and so they're not releasing KEPs through the traditional means on Spacetrack or Celestrack. You can still get them, but you have to go to a different website, and it's kind of a pain. And this might be a problem if AMSAT Fox were to go on an Alana launch that had a classified primary. So we'd have to figure out some sort of other KEPS distribution. Most of the satellites that were launched are healthy and transmitted data. I don't have any information about SMBC-1 or the AeroCubes, but the Aeneas 437.6 megahertz packets are strong. They do have a 437 microhard on board. I'm not sure what's happening with that. CSSWE from the Colorado, University of Colorado, they turned on their science payload, I think, a week ago, and their satellite's doing well. I have some RSSI data from that, I think, on the next slide. CP5 from Cal Poly, strong downlink. They're having trouble on the uplink, which is a characteristic of their CC1000. And their satellite is doing pretty darn well. CXBN from Moorhead, they're having trouble with their downlink, but they were able to get some commands up, and their satellite's looking healthy. They have a, I think it's a radiation experiment, X-ray background radiation experiment. Cinema from UC Berkeley, they were having trouble commanding the spacecraft, but the spacecraft rebooted itself a couple days ago, and so they were able to get comms again, and they're going to start science in, I guess, a couple weeks. REE, which is from Lawrence Livermore National Lab and also NPS, it's a demonstration of the Boeing Colony 2 bus, and they're having some issues with that right now, but they're working on it, and they also developed a mobile CubeSat command and control ground station that they have been putting around the world, around the U.S. It's a network of UHF and S-band ground stations, non-amateur radio UHF and S-band ground stations. Here's some preliminary data from CSSWE. These are just RSSI readings. So this is just signal strength on orbit. You can see that here over the US, it's fairly quiet at 437 megahertz, but as soon as you go over China or Japan or even Eastern Europe, the noise floor starts creeping up. A little bit of information about the latest ISS CubeSat launch earlier this month. It had five CubeSats. There were 4 1Us and a 2U. Tech EdSat from NASA Ames and San Jose State University. They did a space plug and play demonstration, and their telemetry is at 437. F1 is the first CubeSat from Vietnam. It has a UHF and also a VHF transmitter, depending on whether it's in the sun or in the dark, and it has a camera for Earth observation. FitSat 1, I mentioned earlier, it had the 5.8 gigahertz transmitter, as well as two UHF handband transmitters for data. It had the camera with the LED test. WeWish, also from Japan, it had an infrared camera. It has an infrared camera, and it uses SSTV to downlink that data. And then Ryko was that commercial 2U CubeSat from Japan at KU band. So here's a picture taken by the astronauts as those CubeSats got spit out. On the left, we have FitSat 1. In the middle is F1. And on the right is Tech EdSat from San Jose State. Here's the other two CubeSats. Ryko is the 2U on the right side. And WeWish is on the left. And then this is a picture of the deployer. It's a GEM small satellite orbital deployer, which was developed by some of the Japanese universities. So there has been some talk on the AMSAT bulletin board about Dove-1, which is a future CubeSat launch out of Wallops, supposedly at the end of this year, but it'll probably get delayed because they're having trouble with the launch vehicle. It is a private company using an experimental license in the ISS downlink, packet downlink bands. They were coordinated through the IRU, and they are just right now using their first satellite is going to be on that frequencies. Their Dove 2, 3, and 4 are going to use higher frequencies up in 5 gigahertz and 8 gigahertz. So that's one of the future CubeSats that we'll be using our bands. So in conclusion, the low data rate CubeSats will probably stay within the amateur radio service for the foreseeable future because they're using such a small slice of spectrum. I'm not sure that's necessarily a bad thing, and we get a lot of exposure, new hams and all that kind of stuff. The higher data rate CubeSats will be transitioning away from the UHF frequencies where they can use as much bandwidth as they can get their hands on. There's some special thanks there to Mike Scott, Geo, Tom, and Ben for statuses on their various CubeSats. That's all I got. Do we have any questions?
Yes. Time for about two questions.
Are you aware that the amateur space put up a satellite that was called Dove?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
That's what they call their spacecraft.
Thanks for that fairly comprehensive update on CubeSat launches, Brian. That's quite informative. What do you see as the limitation on bandwidth to be used within the amateur radio spectrum? It strikes me there's already a number of things running linear transponders that go considerably beyond the data rates you described. At what point do you think people need to transit away? Because presumably, as you go up to, say, let's say 100 kilobits per second, you'll only be switching that satellite on when it goes over the ground station. So that's going to limit the impact on amateur radio operation.
Yeah, that's true. So right now the limitation is, I think, more regulatory, 20 kilohertz channel. If you ask for a bigger slice, you can probably get it. In terms of all the CubeSats that are in that small section of bandwidth, you have all these CubeSats that are mostly transmitting their data over the U.S. And, if you have CubeSat going up the middle of the U.S., transmitting all this data down, you've kind of wasted that 100 kilohertz for everybody. So because everybody's so close, if you had a ground station, if you could have a ground station, down in Australia or whatever, that'd be great and have, spatially differentiated transmissions. But most of the time, everyone's just over here over the continental U.S. So any other questions? All right, thanks.
Thank you, Brian.